At one time, just dropping the name Hugo Friedhofer could have opened any musical door you could think of, says Gene Lees, jazz writer and musician.
You could get to Aaron Copland, you could get to John Lewis of the Modern Jazz Quartet.
They all knew him, and many sat at his feet, says composer Bruce Babcock.
He probably had the best musical mind of anybody that I ever encountered, and his knowledge of music was encyclopedic.
Henry Mancini once said of Friedhofer that an affirmative nod from the man is worth more than all of the trinkets bestowed by the film industry. But to the rest of the world, the only thing Hugo W. Friedhofer is famous for is being not very famous. Friedhofer was nominated for the Oscar 9 times and won it for the score to The Best Years of Our Lives in the 40s, and composed the music for 91 other films on through the 50s into the early 60s. But he's just never had the name recognition that the star Hollywood composers like Max Steiner, Franz Waxman, Rosa, Newman, and others have had. It's downright ironic. The orchestra, that was Friedhofer's instrument. Born in San Francisco in 1902, he'd started as a cellist, just as the silents were giving way to talkies.
He heard the inner orchestra. It was in his ear. He also played the world's worst piano, by the way.
Gene Lees knew Friedhofer well.
And how Hugo got into film composition was that he was playing cello in an orchestra in San Francisco, and if the music arrived and there was a part or two missing, the conductor would say, Hugo, fix it, and he'd write the part. He'd make up a part.
His knowledge and facility with orchestra parts and orchestral sound demonstrated itself early. He was a master at it, and the studios knew it, and the Hollywood composers knew it.
He went years and years without a composition credit of his own, serving as an orchestrator in the background.
Dave Grusin was an admirer of Friedhofer as a young man. Grusin grew up to write the scores for On Golden Pond, Tootsie, and The Fabulous Baker Boys, among others.
And yet, he could probably write rings around a lot of the people he was actually orchestrating for.
He was so good at filling out other people's music, Eric Wolfgang Korngold wouldn't make a move without him on films like The Adventures of Robin Hood and The Prince and the Pauper. He orchestrated 50 of Max Steiner's film scores, including Mildred Pierce, now Voyager, and Casablanca. By that time, Friedhofer, toiling away at Warner Brothers, was part of a well-oiled machine. The great composers gave him melodies and sketches. Friedhofer turned them into full-blown film scores. I suppressed my creative ego until I could do so no longer, he once said in an interview. He'd been thrown a few film scores to write himself, such as The Adventures of Marco Polo and The Lodger. But what you could call the full emergence of Hugo Friedhofer's ego came about with the 1946 Sam Goldwyn, William Wyler film, The Best Years of Our Lives, about returning World War II veterans.
Well, the old hometown hasn't changed very much, has it?
On that picture, the tables turned. Goldwyn hired Friedhofer as the composer and somebody else to do the orchestrations. Though, as Friedhofer said, my sketches are complete, right down to the last pizzicato. In Best Years, Friedhofer found his own voice. Unlike the European-influenced scores by his colleagues Waxman, Korngold, and Steiner, the American-born Friedhofer wrote for this film, of all things, an American score. Bruce Babcock, composer for Murder, She Wrote, and Matlock, studied with Friedhofer in the 70s, so he had a direct connection with the composer's gift for creative understatement.
If you look at The Best Years of Our Lives, the more you study the various themes, the more you realize how interrelated they are and how cleverly it's all done with really a minimum amount of material.
Here, the composer asserts his orchestral principle.
Clarity. Trying to achieve a chamber music-like clarity, even from the large orchestra.
When it came to a particular climactic scene in which Dana Andrews' character walks through a graveyard of disabled fighter planes, contemplating and reliving his war years as a flyer, Friedhofer was given a gift, a composer's dream. No dialogue for several minutes. Weiler said to him, "From here on, this is your baby. The music has got to tell the story."
He's telling you what's going on inside Dana Andrews' head. Not too many people could have handled it that well.
But of course, the story of Hugo Friedhofer's best year's breakthrough wouldn't be a proper Hollywood story without this footnote. William Wyler, director of the picture, hated Hugo's score. "Why couldn't you give me something like Wuthering Heights?" he said. It was only after the score won the 1946 Best Music Oscar that Wyler came around. The score has been pulled apart, analyzed, held up to the light, and is now considered a landmark. The principles espoused by the wise and witty Friedhofer continued after that to inform his scores for Joan of Arc, Ace in the Hole, and The Young Lions, and dozens of others lesser known. Like many of his colleagues, he drifted into television in the 60s, wrote scores for I Spy and Rawhide, and did less and less as time went on. He died in 1981, virtually ignored, despite the efforts of Gene Lees.
The New York Times printed no obituary whatsoever. I found other papers weren't very interested. They'd never heard of him.
But in his life, he wasn't bitter. He often said he was more a plumber than an artist. And he didn't aspire to so-called serious music. There's no Friedhofer Quartet, no Friedhofer Fifth Symphony. To hear Friedhofer, you have to go to the movies, or at least look at them at home. He spent his whole acerbic, encyclopedic life in Hollywood, where, just at the right moment, he pushed film music in a direction that was distinctively American. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.